freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, we roll along here quite merrily in the Brock and Salk show. We're going to talk to Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl. I think virtually, if not every single one of Seattle's picks in the draft attended the Senior Bowl this year. So Jim should have some pretty good insight on this crew.
Did the linebacker? Did Tyrese?
Oh, he definitely did. That's like the reason he got drafted, is that he impressed at the Senior Bowl. Oh, yeah, Brock, yeah, you do your research ahead of time. I obviously was doing mine last night while you were, not looking at baseball savant like I was. You were just demanding people provide content for us, and that's what we have for you right now.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Oh, man, I got a bunch of questions from the X platform last night, Brock, and then more that came in today. So let's get right to this. Answer the question, jerks. Has there been a picture published of the backside of the thigh of Mike Salk since the popped hammy?
No.
No, I don't think there's really a need for a picture.
Was there much bruising?
None.
You don't bruise anyway.
You don't bruise.
And you wouldn't be able to see it under the fur. That's what, right.
Was there much bleeding? Swelling?
Bleeding?
Was there much internal bleeding?
I don't think so, because there was no bruising.
Was there much swelling?
Not really.
We know you have swelling on your inner forearms.
Oh, I have some rash. Bumps.
Bumps. Yeah. That's a side effect.
How is that rash?
Well, I started using my steroids yesterday.
Right. So, you and John Curley with your steroids.
Yeah, love it.
No picture.
No pictures. I don't think anybody needs to see the backside of my thigh.
You wouldn't even let me touch them.
Go figure. I didn't want you to hurt me, which is something I would have absolutely
assumed. That's part of the video.
Jerks, the Seahawks, Husky football, Husky basketball, and Kraken will all have new head coaches in their upcoming seasons. Who has the most success in year one?
Oh,
so relative to where they were or in general? Relative to where they were, I'm going to say Husky basketball. How could it be worse?
Yes. I would agree with that.
Total, who goes the farthest? Kind of feels like Husky football, don't you think?
They got a lot of people to replace.
I know they do.
But
it's the transfer portal. It's a lot
and
easier to replace
you're going
them.
To the Big Ten with the Iowas and the Michigans.
I know.
And
I mean, none of them feel that set up for success. The Kraken don't really have the roster.
I'm going to say Husky men's basketball can make by far the biggest jump in both ways. Yep. The guy's done it. The guy's done it at two different spots. You realize last year his Utah State team did not bring back one point of production.
No, still.
Everybody was new.
Yeah,
I'm going to say Husky.
I don't know.
Okay.
Doesn't feel right to me.
All right.
You don't think it's the Seahawks? You don't think the Seahawks make the playoffs?
I make it make the playoffs. They go from 8-9 to 9-8 or 10-7.
If they make
the
playoffs, I'll probably be the only one of that group to do so.
No, I think Husky Hoops can make the tournament.
Okay. We'll see about that.
Thanks.
Jerks, if the Sonics were to be coming back, which we've talked quite a bit about today, and you had the opportunity to take any player from any NBA team to be on them, who would you pick?
Easy.
Luka?
Jokic. Not even close. Unbelievable teammate. The greatest dude. The greatest, like, most selfless. And he's got another 4 or 5 years of greatness in him. He's going to be a 3-time MVP. Yeah, I'm going to say Jokic.
Wouldn't recognize him if he walked into this room.
Yes, you would.
No, it wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
Does he have hairy shoulders?
He'd take the whole door.
Wouldn't have a clue what he looks like.
Who did he dress? He dressed up as Gru the other day.
Is he the same as Doncic?
No. I mean, they're similar.
Okay.
From similar places, but Doncic's a point guard and 6'9".
He is?
He
did dress
Isn't
up.
Isn't everybody now a point guard? Like, it doesn't matter what your height is. Everybody's a point guard.
Yeah.
You want Wemby? You wouldn't want him to be on the team?
Ooh, that'd be close.
That'd be pretty fun.
He's
spider.
It's not human.
No, it's crazy. All right, let's see. Jerk, second question. Game/slash sport event triathlon. Cornhole, shuffleboard, old people version, not the bar version. And horseshoes. Salk versus Justin. Who wins?
Ooh.
Cornhole, old people shuffleboard, and horseshoes.
I'm very good at cornhole. I spent a lot of time.
I believe that. Yep.
Horseshoes?
Horseshoes and old people shuffleboard?
Horseshoes was actually our baseball that we'd take that on trips.
Yeah, I think you'd be better at me on probably all three of those.
Shuffleboard, the one on the ground that you get the thing to put. Yeah. No, I don't know about that.
Okay, so maybe I got a shot there. If you replaced one of those other categories with ping pong, then I got a fight chance. I think
so. How about dots?
Dots?
Yeah. Darts.
Oh, darts. Dots. You mean dots?
Yeah, I mean dots.
I'm not terrible at that.
Are you?
Yeah.
What is the East Lake Zoo just recently playing dots?
Oh, yeah?
Oh, there was like a league going on. We barely could get a spot at the board. There's not a lot of place to throw metal tip darts. That's the other problem.
You know what?
Siren Tavern down in 4th Avenue.
They have metal tip.
Surprising is I obviously have not spent much time. I'm not that good at darts. Really not. For someone that throws projectiles.
Big.
Yeah. I'm just not very good at it.
I'm not surprised.
But there's this fine fellow that lives by us at the high school. And I think I've got to do it. It's going to finally hit the point. I've really got to ask him. Because he says he posts these videos for charity events. He's at the field every day. He's got a tire he hangs.
You told me about him.
Yes. He's got a tire that he hangs. And he puts a water bottle or a golf ball inside that tire and everything else. And, yep, we're doing some training with a couple high school kids the other day. And I just screwed around and just winged it right there and knocked that water bottle right off one throw.
Of course.
Yep. And awesome. I said, send that to that charity.
You're such a dork.
I do want to go one of those professional darts events, though.
They seem awesome.
Those guys are unbelievable.
That looks awesome.
They're so good. Okay, we got to go faster.
Next question.
Jerks, if T-Mobile served up a Brock and Salk version of the Double Mitchwitch, what would be on each half?
Oh, great question. Great question.
Well, if they asked me what I want on my half, it'd be one of two things for sure. There are two sandwiches in my life that stand out. It would either just be a chicken salad, most underrated sandwich there is, or just a roast beef sandwich, which is still the best.
Without you?
No, I don't mean a hot roast beef. Okay. Cold roast beef, like a nice, rare roast beef.
See, I thought you'd go liver on your side because you like liver.
I'll tell you what. You go corned beef and corned beef and chopped liver.
There you go.
Yeah, you know what?
That's the one.
Yep.
It's a rarity, but yeah.
Let's go corned beef. What's the bread?
And then
you're going to go rye, obviously. Yeah.
And then I'm going to go Wagyu meatball. Something kind of foo-foo-y.
Yeah, that's just meatballs. Very you.
Yeah, it is.
Foo-foo guy. Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. Not a down-home dude like me.
What's better, the Mitchwitch or the Brock and Salkum right there?
I'm going to guess people will prefer the Mitchwitch. I don't think people are going to like that liver, but hey, liver and corned beef's where it's at.
Next question.
Jerks, why is Brock doing hours of yard work when he owns a teenage son?
A child?
And the baseball boys.
A child?
That's a good question. Yep. Jerks, you've spent a lot of time on the best burgers. What is the worst fast food burger? Easy answer, Carl's Jr.
I don't know if I've had one.
Rotten. And Burger King, both. Just disgusting.
Don't you even bring Burger King into this.
Because it's not real?
It's
not good.
Are you going to make people mad?
No!
Overhyped burger?
Overhyped?
Yeah, overhyped fast food.
I don't feel like anything's that
None
overhyped.
None of them, they're all appropriately
Have you ever had a burger at Wendy's?
It's been a long time.
I've had the chicken sandwich. Spicy chicken sandwich is great. Have you ever had a burger?
At Wendy's? I don't think I have. No. Are they good?
I don't think I've had one either.
I don't know. I can't put it into
it's
this
just
category.
It's just fries and spicy chicken sandwich.
I had Carl's Jr. one time in college and vowed that would never happen again. So it's been like 30 years, but I'm out.
How about Dairy Queen? Have you had a Dairy Queen burger?
They're not a burger joint. That's not fair.
They sell burgers. I
mean, yeah, they might sell it, but that's not what they do.
You don't had a Dairy Queen burger.
All right, no, I have not.
Frank? Justin?
I have Everett? Not.
Yeah.
That's not what they do. That's not fair. They shouldn't be judged on
that. Our Dairy Queen in Libby was only open for 3 months a year because it was in the summer. And I think my sophomore junior year, it snowed too much and the roof collapsed and never reopened. So I never got to have it. Never had it. And I think they would laugh at you if you tried to order hot food at that one.
I think we're going to be done there.
Sorry.
That'll probably do it. That's how we end.
Most overrated? Most overrated one? The Whataburger. Sorry.
Oh, really?
If
there's Texans
that.
Up here, yeah.
I haven't had that.
It's like heavy mustard. I don't need heavy mustard on my burger.
Do you like the, what's the one here where you sit in your car? You like that one?
Burgermaster?
Burgermaster. Cool. You like Burgermaster?
Like
that's pretty
one.
Good.
I like the Frisco Freeze a lot. We just got a text from the Frisco Freeze being overhyped. I don't know
what's
about
a little,
that.
You know what's a little overhyped then, I would say? And it's mostly just because of the commercials. Sonic.
Oh, I've never had one.
I've only had it once because I've never really lived anywhere where they are. When I went in, I was all excited after all the great commercials.
Sure.
It looked like the menu was going to have like 3 gazillion things on it. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe they're trying to do too many things. Just focus on something you're great
doing
at.
Too much.
Yeah, you're just doing too much. Dairy Queen, I don't care what your burger is because you're great major. at the ice cream.
Got a major, not minor.
You got a major in something, Brock, and that's why I know you like Miner's Burgers so much is the answer to this question. Oh, hey, you see a little tie in there? We'll come back. We are going to talk to Jim Nagy in 20 minutes about the Seahawks draft. He knows these guys real, real well. After everything you need to know, including the story that isn't, next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
They did have a chance for the series sweep against a very good Atlanta team. Didn't go the way you might have wanted it to yesterday. Costly error from Mitch Haniger. Some more just kind of weak, untimely offense, and wasn't going to be enough when Chris Sale was pretty much on his game. And your pitcher, Hancock, was good, not quite great. Brock, you just can't put all those things together and hope to beat a good team like Atlanta.
Yeah, we give, you know, we say here all the time around here, 27 outs, no more. We gave them more than 27 outs today, and that was ultimately decided the game in that one inning. They were able to put big two-out hits together. You know, we had two outs, men on second, base hit, big triple off the wall, and that was the game, you know, in that inning. So, again, you got to play clean to beat good teams, and, you know, we weren't able to overcome that with enough offense today.
You know, we had a great conversation with Goldie yesterday. So much fun talking about this pitching, Salk, and just the run that they have been on. Now, the 2001 team was not built on its pitching, obviously. It was built on unbelievable offense. But that pitching staff was, man, they stuck together all year, too. And I went back and looked at that amongst my research last night. The John Halamas, the Paul Abbotts, the Aaron Seelys, the Jamie Moyers, topped off by Freddie Garcia. And honest to God, like... You know, Hancock looks different because he's not as filthy as those other four, but his stuff's like better than all, like Freddie was probably better stuff in his prime, but that's it, you know? And yet Emerson just amongst his peers on this staff, it's like, really?
Yeah,
I'm still throwing 94 yesterday. I still could throw a really beautiful slider. I could still, but his margin is a whole lot less than those other guys. And when you walk four guys, you have a big error by Mitch in the outfield. You just don't find a way to win and sweep that series, and Atlanta gets one out of three.
Yeah, so they got to do something here at some point to kind of get this offense going. Cal Raleigh, we asked him yesterday if he thought they were getting close.
You know, we feel it. We're still getting, you know, comfortable and trying to, you know, it's still early on. It's only a month into the season. You know, there's definitely been some ups. There's been some downs. But, you know, we got to double down on staying with it, staying with our approach, staying stubborn, and I think you've seen some games where we've done a really good job of it, and there's been some games where we haven't done such a so good a job of it. So, like I said, it's just been a little inconsistent. So
I like that phrase, staying stubborn.
Yes.
That sounds like it could define my life. That might be the title of my autobiography one day.
That sounds
staying
like
stubborn.
Something that Scott says, too.
Yeah, it sure does.
I swear to you, we could play a game and give away Mariners tickets.
Him and Divish.
Divish or Cal?
It's really remarkable.
Divish or Cal?
They sound just incredible. Day off today. They are in Texas tomorrow. Well, in Houston, really, to see the floundering Astros. They're 10-20. I got to see what this looks like.
But they won like four in a row. I'd be careful, right?
They didn't win yesterday.
Oh, they didn't? They lost yesterday, too?
They lost yesterday. Okay, all right. Yeah, I don't know. I just want to see what it looks like. I'm not saying they're going to finish the year with
look at their numbers?
Nine losses.
Bro, they're still hitting, right?
I know.
Passan said it to us the other day.
The pitching has just been horrendous.
Correct.
So what does that look like when they're pitching meets this Mariner hitting? I guess we'll find out this weekend, starting tomorrow.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
One thing I can tell you is not going to happen is that this addition of Microsoft coach here, Brad Smith, does not appear to be a major deal in terms of the Mariners ownership group. Actually, there were a bunch of Answer the Question Jerk questions about it also, wondering how this would affect the team and the future and the payroll and all of that. And my understanding is zero, that this is a fairly minor deal. It's an internal transfer of some stock shares from a couple of the minority owners to a new minority owner. They're adding one more, but this is not new, quote unquote, new ownership or an infusion of cash.
But you could see why people would be encouraged, right?
Absolutely.
You could see why people wanted to believe that here comes hundreds of millions of dollars and you know.
But that's why we're here, Brock, to kill people's dreams and hopes. Oh, that's sort of our job here. No, just to provide some reality. It's just not that. It's not that. But if you are Brad Smith or you're related to him, it's really good news. You're now part of the Mariners ownership group, and that seems like a lot of fun.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
What was more relevant to folks here in Seattle is what's going on with the NBA media rights deal, because it's going to get signed real soon. It looks like TNT is getting edged out now by NBC, who wants back in and is offering a lot more money than TNT. Turner has been. So it looks like, in all likelihood, it'll be NBC, ESPN, and Amazon, which will be the three homes of the NBA. Why do you care? Well, because once this gets done, that's when we'll start to hear about the possibility of expansion. And by all accounts, it's happening, and it will go to both Las Vegas and to Seattle. So this is about as close to a done deal as you're going to get. And I would absolutely expect that the current Kraken ownership is going to be heavily involved. Remember, David Bonderman, who is their owner and is worth more than $6 billion, according to the internet, is already in the NBA club. He's a minority owner with the Boston Celtics.
Was Climate Pledge built with the vision of hosting both?
You know it was, Brock, and I'm so glad you asked. There are people sometimes who say it wasn't, or at least said it wouldn't be. I remember a lot of these conversations about what a disaster Climate Pledge was and how it would ensure that we would never get the NBA here and everything else. Those people were, of course, wrong.
I got some peanut brittle for you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The NBA will be returning shortly.
But probably no Steve Snapper Jones.
No.
No Bob Costas or the Czar or the Telestrator.
The Czar. No, I don't think any of them.
But Ahmad Rashad.
But Mike Tirico and Ian Eagle and some other guys who are pretty well connected to the NBA who are already working at NBC. And yes, the return of Roundball Rock from John Tesh as well. So there you go. That is everything you need to know, quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. God, there were a lot of bad information being spewed out there during that arena fight, wasn't there?
Yeah.
It's amazing some of those people, that some of the things that were said about this arena. And it is beautiful. It is gorgeous. It is so well done. It is so professional. Is it expensive? Heck yes, it is. But it is really what you would want from a big time arena.
And it has to. It has to be the Seattle Supersonics. In the green and gold. And you can reimagine if you want some of the logo, but it has to be. And I'm not just holding on to my life and my memories. Like, if the NBA wants to do this right, you bring the Supersonics back. Because every old head in the NBA
says it.
This would
be sort of like bringing the Browns back, right? I mean, that would probably be the best example of it, is the Browns.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if, to me, that's a have to.
Yeah.
Like a non-negotiable, you do not start over. You do not start from scratch. They can do that in Vegas because they never had a team. They never had one.
But don't you have to get it back?
Supersonics is 79.
Don't they have to get it back from Oklahoma City?
Yeah, you go steal from those thieves.
Well, I don't think you can just steal.
No, like, you steal.
I think you have to work out a deal.
Have Clay Bennett lead you into the basement where all that stuff is right there in Oklahoma City, and you bring it back.
I wonder how that will work. I am a little curious about all of that. All right. When we come back, the Seahawks went big investing in players that went and participated in the Senior Bowl this year, including maybe their most surprising draft pick, who made a big name for himself there. We'll talk to the guy who runs that event next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Seahawks rookies are going to be in town for rookie minicamp. Brock, they've got their numbers. We addressed this before you jumped on this morning. Byron Murphy, number 91.
That works. That plays.
Like it better on the outside.
Yeah, it plays.
Kind of like to see him in a 50 number. Nah, Christian Haynes, number 64, plays for sure.
Sure.
Tyrese Knight, 48. I love it. That's a fast middle linebacker number right there. AJ Barner, traditional tight end, 88. Nehemiah Pritchett, 28. And DJ James, 29. Both fine. I like 28 better than 29. Mm-hmm. Laomea at 63. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? That's got a little edge to it. And then Mike Gerald, 65. I don't know. We'll see where that goes and kind of where he's at. If you want to get drafted by the Seahawks and get one of those numbers, pretty good idea to just attend the Senior Bowl, because that seemed to have been a major thing that these guys had in common. So let's talk to the dean of all the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups himself. Jim Nagy joins us now, the head of the Senior Bowl and the man who can just go into his stockpile whenever he wants, grab a little Reese's treat. Jim, how are you?
The Dean of Reese's, Dean of Peanut Butter Cups. I've never been called that, but good to be on, fellas. Thanks for having me.
The last time you told us that story about the boxes of Reese's, and I haven't stopped thinking about it yet. I know you're probably excited about the Senior Bowl and all the guys you got drafted, but I'm just thinking candy bars, quite frankly.
Well, fire away, guys. I'm ready to ready to talk some Hawks.
Well, so let's start there. The Seahawks went big on Senior Bowl attendees in their draft. Before we get to the specific guys, what is the Seahawks' presence when they show up at an event like that?
Yeah, they come like they do everything. They come with their sleeves rolled up. You know, they're usually everyone's here. John wasn't here this year because he was going through the coaching search. So that was a little different, not having my buddy down here to see and hang out with a little bit of practice. But everyone else is here. You know, Matt Barry, Trent Kirshner, the whole crew was down here for it. And you know, they attack the interviews. Just that was a big part of when I was there. I mean, they take the interview process really seriously. So, you know, Matt and Trent and Nolan Teasley, I mean, the whole group, Aaron Heinlein, they get after it. So, you know, there's a lot of great takeaways from Senior Bowl week, just being around these guys for a week. I think that's what gets lost is, you know, yes, they're out of the schools in the fall and doing all their homework, but it really is a short window of time for these teams to get to know these players. I mean, you think about from Senior Bowl to the draft is about 3 months, so you've got about a 90-day window to really learn these guys. So you better take advantage of every opportunity. And Seattle does that every year, and I think you can see in their drafts. I mean, they take what we do here seriously just because it's really the longest exposure you get to these guys in the whole pre-draft process. So, no, I love having those guys come down.
Yeah, this league moves fast. Jim Nagy here with us. It does it feel like it was a lot of years ago that you worked for John, or do you feel like, man, because of that time on task with him, I got a pretty good bead on who he and the organization's going to like because I've got that background with them when it comes to these players down at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like yesterday, especially when I'm back with those guys or I'm talking to one of them on the phone leading up to the draft. And then there's other times where it feels like a long time ago just because everything we've had to put into the Senior Bowl in the last 6 years, but try to grow this thing. But just being in that building and being around that group and around John, it's going to bleed into your evaluation and how you see players and philosophically on some things. So, yeah, there's some teams probably accused me over the years. We have too many big, long corners in the Senior Bowl. But that's not unique. John always likes to laugh at teams when people say, yeah, the Seahawks, they're always looking for those big, long corners that can run. And he's always like, well, who doesn't look for those guys? But it's definitely some takeaways being up there, man. You can't be around a group of guys like that and not have it be part of you a little bit.
All right, so their third-round pick, Christian Haynes, he get into a little scuffle this year at the Senior Bowl?
He did, yeah. He got his helmet ripped off. That was that got lively. That was heated.
What was that about? Tell me more.
It was, didn't he rip the other guy's head off? I think he ripped the other guy's head off, if I remember right.
Yeah, obviously.
Well, it was Jordan Jefferson, the D-tackle from LSU, and I'll say this after ripping through the rest of the practice week. Jordan Jefferson was he was borderline hands to the face quite a bit. So I think he was up and under Christian's face mask and Christian wasn't having it, but that's honestly, guys, like that's a perfect example of takeaways from Senior Bowl week is that that whole Seattle staff was down there on the field. You're standing 10 feet from these guys as they're trying to block each other and you know there's a lot of stuff being talked, a lot of junk being talked, and it gets heated, and you know you can see facial expression, you can see body language, and you can see things you can't see on the college tape. It was a really competitive period that day, and they were mixing it up good. I love that Christian wasn't taking anything.
What is and how do he and Laimea's personality align, and how will they fit here in Seattle?
Both were quieter guys through the week. You know, I make a point. I try to engage all these guys through the process, get to know them a little bit, but. I think they're going to be classic offensive linemen that come in and do their jobs. You know, you didn't hear much from either guy, but I really like both football players. You know, we try to. I put quite a bit of stuff out on Christian Haynes. I think I put a video thread out on Christian Haynes. You know, leading up to the draft, I try to do that with all our guys, but just kind of run out of days and run out of hours in the day. But Laimea was a guy that was really flying under radars. you know, I think he's ultimately going to be a better fit at guard, but made some things look easy in the Pac-12 at tackle. I mean, this guy's a two-position player. I think his highest ceiling is at guard, but yeah, they got two really good ones. And I know talking to those guys, they're excited about the offensive lineman they added. I didn't put a lot of work in on the Finley kid, the kid they got from Finley, but I guess, you know, he really popped out during the process and they jumped on him. So, yeah, really like, to me, LaMea and Haynes are both guys. When I watched the tape in the fall, I thought both were NFL starters when I did them.
Are both guys NFL starters now, or is there some growth opportunity in one spot or the other?
Well, I certainly think Christian Haynes will be. Again, I'm not, you know, aware of their depth and where they're at and the progress once right. They leave here. Once they get to the NFL, I don't have time to watch those guys too much. But, yeah, I think Christian Haynes is a guy that's ready to start. He played a ton of football there. At UConn, he's, and again, I don't know what they're going to be running scheme-wise in this new offense, but I thought when I did Christian, he was a slam dunk. Like, you could argue one of the top one or two best zone scheme fits in the entire draft for the inside guys. You know, probably he and Graham Barton from Duke were probably the quickest off the ball and the best lateral movers in the class, and that's what I put in that thread. A lot of the stuff in that thread I put out on Christian was some of the backside cutoff stuff and you know, just him reaching and hooking and just doing some really cool stuff on the move. So yeah, I would think that Christian would have a serious chance to start. And over time, I think LaMea will too.
Well, the Seattle market will be introduced to Byron Murphy here today and over this weekend with the rookies coming to town and the big press conference. Byron Murphy, can he play at all? And were you surprised at number 16, the Seahawks took him right then and there?
Brock, you are bringing up such a sore subject, man. So we had Byron committed to playing the Senior Bowl. I'll just give you a little backstory on this. And my good buddy Daniel Jeremiah, who I spent a lot of years on the road with, I was actually with him at the Eugene Courtyard at the Oregon Pro Day one year, and he dropped it on me the night before Pro Day that he was leaving scouting to take a job with the NFL Network. We still joke about that. I'll never forget that. But he put out, the NFL Network had him put out, like, it was either a mock first round or it was a top 50 list in the middle of January. And he had Byron Murphy at like 11 or 12, and he had Telly Essefuaga from Oregon State, like, the next one. And I texted him. I'm like, man, why do you do this? I'm like, I promise you we're going to lose both these players by the end of the day. And he was like, and he texted back. He's like, no, don't say that. Don't say that. I'm like, DJ, come on, man. Like, and again, I was kind of busting on him. I know right. He doesn't just put that stuff out without his bosses asking for it. Literally an hour later, mm-hmm. Byron Murphy's agent calls me and tells me, he's like, Jim, I can't send him now. And I'm like, cause DJ put him a mock draft out. Like, what are you talking about? So anyway, yeah, Byron was one of the guys. We held on to Fuaga. We held on to Fuaga, so that was good. But, yeah, we lost Byron. And I guess the one thing I'll say, I put it out on draft night. He just reminded me so much of Grady Jarrett when I did him. And that's a huge compliment because that's one of my favorite interior D linemen I've done in the last 15, 20 years. I was a huge Grady Jarrett fan. You know, quick off the ball, powerful, explosive, plays hard. Plays bigger than his size against double teams. Like, for an undersized guy, he's super hard to move because of the leverage. Yeah, just a really fun football player. Like, easily could make the case he was the best defensive player in the draft.
Yeah, I was joking with Salk. I don't think I have ever seen, I went back and looked at some of his pre-draft videos, his pre-draft workout there. I don't think I've seen a D-tackle shirtless doing drills. Like, you know, he had nothing flopping around, nothing that's got to be like tucked in. I mean, that dude is just I called him a muscle ball after the draft and on draft day and the next day. And we'll all get to see him kind of up close and personal this weekend. But to take him there at 16, Jim, and now after the fact, we know there were at least four or five trades on the table, right? They were right at that pivot point. Almost no defender other than Latu had been drafted. How hard do you think it was for John to not, as a guy that loves to manipulate that board, what does that say about Byron that they did not move down and did not trade in that last Thursday's draft?
Yeah, I think it says a lot because I'm sure there were good offers. And I think it says a lot about the player because it wasn't a huge position of need. You tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, you guys know the team a lot more intimately than I do at this point, but yep. You know, with Leonard Williams and Jaron Reed, I mean, they had some guys in there. This wasn't, they didn't have to do this. They could have move back and accumulated picks like John likes to do. So yeah, I think it's a huge statement of what this guy is, because what you don't want to do is pass on a player and kind of chase a need, which, you know, I mean, I'm not saying my time in Seattle, but I've been in part of teams where we've done that, where we've chased a need and passed on a better player. And it doesn't usually work out. So for them to stick there, and the guy they probably felt was the best player on the board, that's hard to do. It takes a lot of discipline. So hats off to him, man. They're going to get an ass kicker, so he's going to be fun to watch.
Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl joining us. So the player that was the sort of consensus, quote-unquote, reach in this draft was Tyrese Knight, and that's not to say he's not going to be a phenomenal football player in the fourth round, but there were other guys that were supposed to be, you know, higher rated, et cetera, at that point. And I know he was he stood out quite a bit at the Senior Bowl. And I tend to believe if they're going to take a player like that in the fourth round, there's a pretty good reason why. Do you have a sense as to what that reason might be?
Yeah, I'd be curious to, like, who they were supposed to take. That's what I
don't know. So, really, you know, you look at these mocks, and there's like 1,000 of them, but there were a few other linebackers that were, quote-unquote, rated ahead of him there. So what was it about Tyrese Knight that they specifically must have loved?
Speed and instincts. I know that group you're talking about, because I actually went back and looked to see who was there around that time. And yeah, it was the speed stuck out above all those other guys. And there were some good players in that cluster of players. But I'll say this. So I went up to Jacksonville State University, which for the listeners, that's not in Florida. That's in Alabama, Jacksonville State. Rich Rod's coaching there. So they played a week zero game against UTEP. And I went up there to see a quarterback from UTEP, actually, Gavin Hardison, mm-hmm. who just signed, I think, with Miami as an undrafted free agent. I went up there, and that's the value for us of going to games. You know, Knight wasn't really on the radar, and met with the head coach before the game, and he'd been with a guy named Mark Cimino at Kansas State back in the day, and Mark had a great, like, 10 or 11-year NFL career. I know, Brock, I know you know him. Yeah. And he just said, he's like, this guy's the best one I've been around since Cimino. And he was making all these comparisons. And I was like, well, shoot, I got to watch this guy. And he's really instinctive. What he didn't see during Senior Bowl week, which, because everyone just focuses on the one-on-one stuff, and I get it, that's easily consumable and it's fun to watch. But what Tyrese Knight did in the team periods, the inside run stuff, the team periods, where he could really show his instincts, is what stood out. And that's another guy for Hawks fans, if they want to go back. I did a thread on Knight in the middle of the fall. You know, some of the plays showing his instincts and showing his range of the sideline. This kid can really run. You know, I think he was a mid 4-5 guy. So when you couple his instincts and just his ability to trigger, when he sees it, he goes. And then his ability to run, you know, he's what Seattle's looking for at linebacker. You know, what we've kind of feel like, I know they're going to be different now with a new coach, but you know, Seattle's always wanted speed linebackers, and this kid plays fast.
Well, I think it's going to be the same answer for the two corners. I did not get down to the Plains, did not see him. I saw DJ when he was in Eugene with the Ducks, but tell me about these two corners and why they're today Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I can kind of lump these two guys in together. They're both local. DJ's from Mobile. I've been watching this guy since high school. Nehemiah Pritchett's from right up the road, about an hour away in Jackson, Alabama. You know, we offered them 2 years ago to come to the Senior Bowl. And at that time we thought they would be like fringe third, fourth round draft picks. They both went back to school last year, got the NIL money, went back to school. So I think Seattle got really good value. They're different players. To get them in 5 and 6, like that's not where I thought those guys would go. Nehemiah, you know, is more your prototypical Seahawks corner, you know, 6-footer, long, 4.36, whatever he ran, somewhere in the 4.3. So, you know, big height, weight, speed corner. Thought he played his best year this year. Honestly, like the one thing I questioned in the past was finishing ability and making plays. And he made a bunch during Senior Bowl week. I thought this was another guy quietly had a really good week you didn't hear a lot about. And then DJ's a little different. I think Nehemiah's more of an outside-only guy. And then DJ's a guy that I could see being a really high-end nickel at the next level because of his instincts playing off. The guy sees it. And I'm sure, Brock, you probably saw that as a young guy at Oregon, because that stuff, if you see it, you can usually see it. And I'm sure he saw it as a young guy out at Oregon. But, you know, just jumping routes and doing those things. And he was used mostly outside at Auburn, but I really think he's going to would have a good chance if they decided to move him into nickel, just because of what he can do jumping routes. And he's switched up. He's another low 4.4 guy. He can run. Got some playmaking ability to him. So for those guys to be sitting there, I don't know if that was the plan going in to take two corners, you know, on day three. But when you're staring at two players like that that are battle-tested in the SEC that can run, I mean, shoot, you take your shot there.
You mean you want to see it, not hear it, right? You want to see it. There's a great line. All these teams, organizations now, Jim, record those phone calls to the prospects, right? Letting them know, and we get to hear all the back and forth. And DJ said to Carl Scott, "You got a dog. I just want you to know you got a dog." And Carl Scott's like, "Well, you know, I'd rather see it than just hear it." I see better than I hear. So you love the cornerback machismo, but he's going to be tested and thrown into this thing right away.
Hey, did Sam Howell ever – he wasn't at the Senior Bowl a couple of years ago, was he?
Yeah, he was.
Tell me about Sam Howell, because that's sort of the other conversation in town right now. We were, by all accounts, he's not going to get the start, certainly not right away, and Geno still kind of got that stranglehold on the job. But how would he have looked if he had been in this past year's quarterback class?
Yeah, that's still a head scratcher, man. Like how that guy left in the fifth round, it didn't make a lot of sense. His best tape was his sophomore tape. There's no question, because he had a lot of NFL guys around him that year, you know. And then his junior year, the year he came out, he didn't have those guys, and we just saw him run the ball a ton. He was just running over people that junior year. But it's, you know, I give Seattle a lot of credit that they went out and traded for a guy that they thought highly of through the draft process, right? And so spending time with Sam, I actually got to play a little golf with him before Seattle made that trade for him, and he was still in Washington. And I knew he started every game, and I'm like, "Sam, who is your offensive line?" And he rattled off the five names, and I was like, "Whoa, you played 17 games behind that line?" And I know at one point during the year he was leading the league in passing, so – you got a guy that's younger than some of these guys that were in this draft class, who's got all this game experience. I'm not saying anything that Seattle fans don't know or you guys haven't talked about, but I mean, man, whatever. I don't know what they gave up for him, but you know, they certainly didn't give up a top. They didn't spend a top 10 pick and, you know, spend top of the first round money on this guy. So, it's a cool thing to stash him away. And I really hope they open it up. I hope it's an open competition, similar to like when they had Russell and Matt Flynn. And I was with the Chiefs when Russell came into Kansas City in the preseason and lit us up for like 900 yards and 14 touchdowns in that game. I would love to see a legitimate open competition and see where this thing comes out, because I think Sam's the starting quarterback in the league. I'd just love to see him with a better supporting cast.
I heard he's a pretty good golfer. So what did he shoot that day?
It was him and Drake May. And I will say, we played young guys versus old guys, and old guys won.
Wow.
We got lucky. But
the old guys, let me guess, short down the middle every time?
Well, short, definitely. I don't know about down the middle every time, but short, definitely. Now, I'll say this about Drake May. So Drake was driving, was teeing off with iron the whole day until we got to eight, and it's a par four. I don't know the distance, but I've never seen anyone drive the green, and he pulls out his driver for the first time all day and hits it over the green. I was like, oh my God. But you know, those big quarterbacks can hit it, right, Brock?
No, not this big old one.
The one on the phone.
No, not this big old one with a bad back, but yeah, some of those
not
other
this
big
one who
guys,
keeps hitting the
sure.
ground with his driver before just, he hits the ball. That's a different issue.
Jim, you're the best, man.
Thank you.
Insights are just absolutely awesome. So appreciate all the time. And yeah, man, if you get that extra box of Reese's, I'll give you Salk's address. He would love it.
It's just what I need in my house is more Reese's. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. There's Jim Nagy at the Senior Bowl, the Reese's Senior Bowl, in case you didn't know. And a man with the access to all those Reese's whenever he wants them.
And access to all these guys, like in the most unique way, right? Yeah.
You feel good about the Tyrese Knight thing a little bit more after hearing it?
Speed and instincts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a feeling you would. He's the guy that intrigues me. I wouldn't say most. That's not fair. I mean, Byron Murphy's a number one pick, 16 for a reason. Like, okay. But of the rest of the crew, I'm pretty intrigued by Tyrese Knight because of the reach factor, because that's not what they were supposed to do then. And I kind of like that.
Well, they were kind of supposed to still take a linebacker. It was just, you know, a lot of these sites from ESPN, our buddy Matt Miller and others, you know, had him as a six rounder and had other guys with bigger names, bigger resumes, bigger schools to be picked ahead of him. So I think linebacker and inside linebacker was definitely a need.
Absolutely
a need in this draft. But the fact that it was someone from UTEP that nobody was really talking about to Seattle, other than those in the know, other than those that see him practice for a week, other than those that see him in person, other than those that, and I love that word right there, instincts, because that's the key. That's the key. And I think that's where, and I said this the other day about Mike McDonald in this pick in particular, is you've got to trust Mike's eye and his staff's eye to really gauge that level of instinct. Because I think there have been some raw players over the last few years, right? Derek Hall's instincts, I don't think real high. Boye Mafe coming out of Minnesota, that was not a strength of his as well. Their speed, strength, height, all those things. But instincts, I really, really liked when he dropped that word.
Good stuff. All right. Well, he also talked about opening up the quarterback competition. We're going to discuss that in about a half hour at 9:30. Up next, there is, it's not news yet, but there is coming news, and it's ultimately going to lead to a lot of very happy Sonics fans here in Seattle who can't wait to get basketball back in town. What about for everybody else? What does this actually look like if and when this happens here in the next couple of weeks or months? That's next on Brock and Salk.